Last time we were together and looking in the book of Jeremiah, we looked at some of the great symbols and signs that God used, symbols that God used to speak through Jeremiah to the people. They were symbols of warning, of God's call for them to come back and return. For the last four or five times we've been in Jeremiah, we've looked at some of the most difficult passages in the Bible, some of the most strongest language of judgment, and even last time, looking at the word Gehenna and how Jeremiah talked about the valley of Hinnom, the valley of Gehenna. And from that idea, from that term, comes the New Testament word Gehenna, which Jesus used to describe, translated in the New Testament as hell. Literally, the fires outside the walls of Jerusalem. Jeremiah is one of the most difficult books of the Bible to study and to absorb and to hear all the things that are so painful in the book of Jeremiah. We know that Jeremiah lived about 40 years as a prophet, and every one of those years were difficult. Jerusalem was on the edge of being destroyed for those 40 years, and as those years got closer to the end, it just got darker and darker and worse and worse, and Jeremiah tried his best to bring change and reformation, and yet the people did not respond. Well, over those 40 years of Jeremiah's life and ministry, there were five kings that he overlapped, and his life as a prophet overlapped, and he spoke to and he worked with five kings. We read each of those names when we read from 2 Kings chapter 23 through 25. I wanted to read that long passage because that is kind of the place that you go to when you want to put all of it together, the history of the time of Jeremiah's ministry. Tonight, I just want to talk about what we read in those chapters and kind of summarize the end of Israel, the end of these five kings, the kingdoms that took place as Judah had come to an end. Each of them, each of these kings, Jeremiah, as a prophet, dealt with and talked to and advised and chronicled, and also the stories of these five kings and what went on this time are recorded in other places in the Bible, not just in the prophets like Jeremiah, but in the book of 1 and 2 Kings and the book of 1 and 2 Chronicles. It tells the story of the kings and what happened during that time. Well, we know that Jeremiah became a prophet in about 620 B.C. Josiah was king when Jeremiah became the prophet. When we think of the term or the name Josiah, right away what comes to my mind is Josiah was the boy king. He was the king that became king, or he's the boy that became king because his father, Ammon, was only king for 2 years and he was murdered. And so Josiah really became king before his time, in other words, and he was the youngest king ever to rule in Jerusalem. But another thing about Josiah that's unique among all the kings of Judah, although there were some similarities with some of them, is Josiah, even though he was only a boy when he became king, all throughout the time of his life and his reign as king, he wanted to do what God wanted him to do. Josiah sticks out among all the kings within a 100-year period as the only king that the Bible has anything good to say about throughout Jeremiah's life and ministry. He was a tender boy, and very early on, Josiah indicated that he wanted to follow God. He wanted to respond to Him. And even at a young and a tender age, he set out to reverse all the negative, sinful violations of the covenant. Josiah was one light in all the darkness, both before him and after him. Because when you look at the kings, the last kings, the 100 years of the existence of Jerusalem and God's people, as God's people, 100-year time period, there were 7 kings. And in about the middle of them was Josiah. He was the only king that honored God out of those 7 generations of kings. His grandfather was a man named Manasseh. Manasseh is described as the absolute most wicked king in the history of Jerusalem. And he reigned the longest. For 55 years, Josiah's grandfather was king in Jerusalem. And he was a very terrible king. And he led the nation so much into idolatry and into all kinds of sins that it almost like he took the nation of Israel and Judah one-way street to destruction was the grandfather of Josiah. And then the next king was Manasseh's son, I should say, named Ammon. He only ruled for 2 years and he was murdered. And then there was Josiah, the little boy, some say 8 years old, he became king. Then he ruled for 31 years. And then after that, you have four more kings, and they're all evil. So you have the kings before and the kings after. But when Jeremiah became the prophet, Josiah was the king. Now, Jeremiah became the prophet toward the end of Josiah's reign as king. He reigned for 31 years. Josiah was 39 years old, if I remember the timeline exactly, when he was killed in an army battle. But for 31 years, Judah, Jerusalem, had a king on the throne who was a good man. And he tried to get rid of the idols and take away the places of worship that violated God. When you think back of the context of what Josiah did, Josiah brought many reforms in Jerusalem, but they didn't last for very long. And he was constantly fighting against the wickedness of the people around him, the priesthood, the false prophets, and the others that had followed his grandfather Manasseh and his father Ammon. So Josiah was the only bright light. And it was in Josiah's reign, toward the end of it, that Jeremiah became a prophet. So when you open the book of Jeremiah and you read the first three chapters, you're reading Jeremiah's words during the days of King Josiah. Again, the good king, when Jeremiah is saying basically that the people are going down a road that if they don't change, if they don't back up from, they're going to be destroyed. And then as Jeremiah continues to write, and then Josiah dies, and the next king comes, and Jeremiah writes harsher, or there are more warnings of judgment, and the book gets darker and darker as you get to the end. But the first few chapters are of Jeremiah talking about the same things that were important to Josiah, who was the king at the time. In early Jeremiah, he's calling the people to repent. Well, following Josiah, when Josiah died at the age of 39 or so, he died in battle, and I'll talk about that in a few minutes. Following Josiah, there was a king that only ruled for 3 months, and then a king that ruled for 11 years, and then a king that ruled for 3 months, and a king that ruled for 11 years. So you have four kings, but altogether it was only about 23 years after Josiah died until Jerusalem was completely and utterly destroyed. And so really from the time that Jeremiah begins to prophesy until the total destruction of Jerusalem completely in every way when Josiah goes off the scene and you have these four kings is about 23 years. There's also something else going on in addition to the warnings of the destruction of Jerusalem and this one-way road that Jerusalem and its kings are on after Josiah is gone. And that is all around Israel, all around Palestine, there are events that are taking place that this converging of timelines of something else going on. And that is, there's two great empires that are about to clash. One is Egypt to the south, and one is Babylon to the north and to the east. Now, where's Israel? When you think of where Egypt is on a map, and you think of where Babylon is, and then you think where the Assyrian Empire is, where's Israel? It's right in the middle. And so these three empires are about to begin to clash at the end of Josiah's reign, and Israel's going to be caught in the middle of it. And God brings together not only these warnings and judgments of punishment for His people, but God will use the Egyptians, and He will use the Assyrians, and He will use the Babylonians to bring judgment. And part of what I read in those three chapters I read earlier are those two timelines coming together. These kings and who they are and what they did and the forces that converge and take place around them. These scriptures shows us the converging of these two timelines. Egypt and Babylon become the punishing rods of God's people. Well, when Josiah died, he died at the hands of the Pharaoh of Egypt. Basically, Egypt had a large army, and it wanted to fight against the Babylonians because the Babylonians were beginning to move across Asia, and they were beginning to gobble up the Assyrian Empire. And Egypt was afraid that Babylon was going to come down and try to conquer its empire too. And so Egypt sent an army up through Palestine, and they joined up with some of the Assyrians to fight against the Babylonians. And when they did, at the time, the king in Jerusalem, Josiah, believed that God wanted him to go out. He did not hear that from the Lord, but he believed that he needed to stop the Egyptian army from going up and trying to push back the Babylonians and Josiah. And they all converged in Israel in a place called Megiddo, which is the Armageddon, which we hear of and read of in the book of Revelation. The story of Armageddon and the great battle that will take place is recorded in the book of Revelation. Actually, it's not the only time there was a great battle. It happened several times in Israel's history, and one of them is during the days of King Josiah. King Josiah goes up, and the Egyptian army comes up. They destroy destroy the army of Jerusalem, the army of Israel, and they kill King Josiah. And so that brings an end to Josiah's reign. Again, the only king in review, the only king that has that the scriptures talk about in a positive and a good way. God is beginning now to bring punishment on the people of Israel. Well, after Josiah died at the hands of the Pharaoh of Egypt, then the people in Jerusalem wanted to make Josiah's brother the king. And so we read that Jehoahaz, I practiced that this afternoon. I don't think I got it right. Well, his name is also called Shalom in another place. And so either one of those words. In the book of Kings, he's one name, a Hebrew name, and the other name is a Babylonian name. And so I'll just call him Jehoahaz. The people wanted him to become king. He was Josiah's brother. And I remember now, Josiah's father had died very early, Ammon. And so he still was a young man. This Jehoahaz was only 18 years old. He must have been a much younger brother, of course, to Josiah. And the people wanted him to be king. And so the people established him as king. He was only 23 years old. But this king, after Josiah, was a king that only lived for 3 months. And he reigned for only 3 months. The only thing we really know about him are two things. One is that he did evil in the eyes of the Lord. Again, he took after his father Ammon and his grandfather Manasseh, and he did not follow in the ways of his brother Josiah. He did evil in the eyes of the Lord. And we also know that the Pharaoh in Egypt, after he had killed Josiah, and he heard that the people wanted to put Josiah's brother in as king in Jerusalem, that he sent his army back up to Jerusalem. And he demanded, he basically captured Jerusalem and captured the king within 3 months of when he became king and took him back to Egypt and basically said, we will choose who will be the next king, the Jewish king in Judea. And so this king only lasted for 3 months. He was taken back to Egypt and he was killed there. And so Pharaoh then chose who the next king would be, and he chose a man that he believed would do what he told him to do, and would collect the taxes that he told the king to collect. See, the problem with this last king that only lasted 3 months is Pharaoh told him to collect a certain amount of tribute from the Judean province and send it down to Egypt. And if so, then Egypt would leave him alone. And the king, Josiah's brother, said, no, I'm not going to do that. In the same way that Josiah would not do that. He would not cooperate with Pharaoh, neither would his brother. And so Pharaoh sent the army up, captured him, took him back to Egypt, put him to death, and put in the next king in power, because this next king would cooperate with him and do what he asked him to do. The next king, his name was Eliakim, and in the Jewish name, he was renamed, Jehoiakim. So when you see these names, I know they're confusing. It really takes a while to kind of get them on a paper and see where they fit. We have Josiah, and then you have this other guy, Jehoiakim. You know who I mean, Shalom. And then you have Jehoiakim. I just want you to notice the last three letters of this king's name, Jehoiakim, because the next one will be Jehoiachin. This is so confusing when you're reading the kings and the prophets and the things about this. But Jehoiakim reigned for 11 years. And he reigned for 11 years because he cooperated with the Pharaoh in Egypt. And he pretty much took the silver and gold that Israel had, that Judah had, and he collected them and he demanded taxes of the people in order to pay off the Pharaoh so the Pharaoh of Egypt would leave Jerusalem alone. And that's what happened. He taxed the people heavily. And he bought them off. He bought off the Egyptians. And so he had relative peace for 11 years. But what we read about the moral life of Jehoiakim, and we read from Jeremiah, is that Jehoiakim also did evil in the eyes of the Lord. All of the 11 years of this particular king's reign are found in Jeremiah with all the prophecies and all the warnings and the judgments and the negative things that Jeremiah says to this king. I mean, to Jeremiah, it would seem like Jehoiakim was the worst king of Judah, although the next king also was pretty bad as well. Jeremiah is constantly coming to Jehoiakim and saying, King, you're doing evil in the eyes of the Lord, and yet all his warnings fall on deaf ears. And he calls the king to repentance, but he doesn't repent. For example, in chapter 36, we have just a little bit of a story and a picture. It says, in the fourth year of Jehoiakim, this king, the son of Josiah, king of Judah, this word came to Jeremiah from the Lord. Take a scroll and write on it all the words I have spoken to you concerning Israel, Judah, and all the other nations from the time I began speaking to you in the reign of Josiah till now. Perhaps when the people here of Judah hear about every disaster I plan to afflict on them, each of them will turn from his wicked way. Then I will forgive their wickedness and their sins. Now remember, although this is in chapter 36, this is fairly early in the chronology of Jeremiah and his relationship with the kings. You have Josiah is done 3 months, his brother's done, and then you have this king. And so it's still pretty early on in that overall time period until the end. The word of the Lord came to Jeremiah. Jeremiah, write down what I'm telling you. Take it to the king. Take it to the people. Maybe yet they'll turn back. So that's what Jeremiah does. He takes the words of the Lord and he puts them together. And his assistant, the scribe, Baruch, writes it down. And I won't read all the scripture in the passage, but this chapter just kind of details it, chronicles how God is trying to give Jehoiakim another chance. Jehoiakim, turn back, respond. But this is the response of Jehoiakim when the prophet Jeremiah brings the word of the Lord. He brings the scroll in. Go on to verse 20. Then the official said to Baruch, you and Jeremiah go and hide. Don't let anyone know you are here. After they put the scroll in the room of Eliashem, the secretary, they went to the king in the courtyard and reported everything to him. The king sent Jehudah to get the scroll, and Jehudah brought it from the room of Elishama, the secretary, and read it to the king and all the officials standing beside him. It was in the ninth month, and the king was sitting in the winter apartment with a fire burning in the fire pot in front of him. Whenever Jehudah had read three or four columns of the scroll, the king cut them off with a scribe's knife and threw them into the fire pot until the entire scroll was burned in the fire. Well, this was the reaction of the king of Jerusalem. This is the reaction of the descendant of David. No wonder God said there's no hope for Judah. The king sat there smugly on his throne, and as the scroll was read and the warnings were read, he would take his knife out, and as part of the scroll was read, he'd cut it off and throw it in the fire. Cut it off and throw it in the fire until it all was gone. And other symbolizing, I won't listen to the word of the Lord. And that's the attitude. That's why Jeremiah speaks us harsh and bitter words to the king and to the people during this time. Jeremiah prophesied that this king would be cast over the wall of Jerusalem by his own people and be destroyed by the animals. Again, a prophecy about the death of Jericho, Jehoiakim, that came true. This was a brutal time in Jeremiah's life and calling and ministry. During this time, we read where he was beaten. He was put into stocks. And we read the story of how he was taken and he was dropped into a well and he sank into the mire. I think the King James Version says maybe he sinks into the mire. One of them says that he was left in the pit of the mud of the well. Again, he's speaking the word of the Lord. He's trying to get the king to come back and turn back, but the king won't do it. And Jehoiakim, again, heart is hardened before the Lord and before God. And so Jeremiah comes back to the king and says, King, you'll be cast over the walls of Jerusalem. You'll be destroyed. And then very soon it begins to happen. During these 11 years of his reign and the darkness that continued pervasively over Judah, something else was happening. The balance of power was shifting from Egypt to Babylon. I said that Egypt controlled Palestine and part of Assyria during this time. But over those 11 years, the strength of Babylon had been growing stronger and stronger. And Jeremiah keeps saying that throughout Jeremiah. He keeps saying, watch out for Babylon. Watch out for Babylon. In the beginning of Jeremiah's reign, Egypt was the most powerful empire that existed. But by the end of Jeremiah's reign, the balance of power had shifted toward Babylon, and they had sent their armies into the west and into Palestine, and now they controlled Palestine. And so when they began to control Palestine, Jehoiakim began to fight back instead of sending the taxes to Babylon as he had done in Egypt. He decides that he's not going to do what the Babylonians tell him to do, and so over the 11 years of his reign, the balance of power had shifted toward the strength of the Babylonians. And now they demand taxes from Judah, or they will come and destroy the city, which they will eventually do anyway. Jehoiakim, who had appeased the Egyptians, refuses to do the same thing for the Babylonians as they come into the city. And so when the army comes to Jerusalem, Jericho's own people, I'm just going to paraphrase what happens. All the people know that If Jehoiakim doesn't do what Babylon says, and in this case the army came and so did Nebuchadnezzar, if he doesn't do what Nebuchadnezzar tells him to do, then the whole city will be burned to the ground and destroyed. And so they rebel against the king Jehoiakim, and according to the story, they take Jehoiakim and they take him out and they literally throw him over the city wall, just like Jeremiah had prophesied in the book of Jeremiah. They throw him over the wall and he's killed, and the animals eat his carcass, and they haul him away. And so here comes the end of the story. But when the army came to Jerusalem, Jehoiakim's own people threw him over the city. And then they took his son, the next king, again, Jehoiachin, C-H-I-N. You go from K-I-M to C-H-I-N, and they make him king. Just like after Josiah, the people want to make their man king. In the first case, it was Josiah's brother. In this case, it is Jehoiakim's son, Jehoiachin, who becomes king. So Nebuchadnezzar continues into the city, and basically he comes and they put up the bulwarks, and they're trying to keep the Babylonians out of the city. And so Jehoiachin, the new king, has only been king for 3 months, and he calls to the prophet Jeremiah and says, Jeremiah, what am I going to do? Now, the only thing we know about Jehoiachin, which is not very much because he didn't reign very long, says he did evil in the eyes of the Lord, but we don't know the details of it. But he does hear from the prophet, what should he do? And the prophet says, Jehoiachin, the only thing that you can do is give up. The only thing that you can do is Nebuchadnezzar is going to destroy you and the family and the city if you don't give up and pay the taxes and do what he tells you to do. And so Jehoiachin, unlike his father, gives up. And in chapter 24, verse 12, let's go there just quickly. Jeremiah chapter 24, verse 12, it says, no, I have the wrong reference. That can't be right. I have the wrong cover. But basically, Jehoiachin basically gives up. And he says, okay, I won't fight Nebuchadnezzar. I'll do what he tells me to do. And so he was taken captive, literally, by Nebuchadnezzar and the army. They come in and they take Jehoiachin captive and his mother his family, and he takes them captive. And instead of killing Jehoiachin, Nebuchadnezzar takes Jehoiachin and his family back to Babylon along with many of the people that were there. Again, a large number of people, the artisans and the craftsmen. See, the Babylonians handled it differently than the Egyptians and the Romans before them. If there was a rebellion, they would absolutely just kill all the people, but the Babylonians were different. They wanted to take the best of every province back to Babylon and enrich their culture. And so they took at this time, because Jehoiachin did not fight back, he didn't refuse to surrender. He surrendered and he was treated kindly. In fact, he and his family were taken back to Babylon. And then later on in the book of Jeremiah, it says after 37 years, Jehoiachin is released from captivity and his family comes back, in other words, a remnant back to Jerusalem. After the punishment had been done and God begins to restore again, God actually uses Jehoiachin and his family in order to bring back and begin to bring back a remnant and again to bring them back to Jerusalem. He only ruled for 3 months, but he lived in Babylon for the next 37 years until he was brought back to the city of Jerusalem a long time later. Well, Nebuchadnezzar, he sent Jehoiakim off away back to Babylon, and then he appointed the very last king that would rule over the throne in Jerusalem. Again, a descendant of David. Zedekiah was also a son of Josiah. By this time, Zedekiah, of course, was the last one, the last son of Josiah. And I don't remember how old he was, but he was the last king in Jerusalem. And Nebuchadnezzar appointed him to be the Jewish ruler in Jerusalem at this dark time. But it involved the paying of taxes again. And the king said, Zedekiah, I'm paraphrasing, if you pay the taxes and you do what we tell you to, then we will not destroy your city. We will not take more of your people to Babylon if you do what we tell you to do. And so it was a very dark 9 years at Zedekiah, 9 to 11 years that Zedekiah was the king in the very last days. The problem with Zedekiah, the descriptions of Zedekiah are not nearly as negative as the descriptions of the kings before him, especially Manasseh and then the kings after Josiah. But Zedekiah did not listen to the prophet Jeremiah. He could have changed some things. And the prophet spoke to Zedekiah many times, but Zedekiah refused to listen. And the people around Zedekiah, for example, Pashur, the priest, was a very wicked man. And so Zedekiah had these advisors around him who were very ungodly people. And when Jeremiah would come and speak to him, they would try to silence the prophets. And there's examples in Jeremiah where other true prophets of God were put to death by Zedekiah's priest and other people in the kingdom. And so the truth never got out. And Zedekiah never made the changes that he could have done. And when Jeremiah advised Zedekiah, which he did many times, Jeremiah would come to Zedekiah in the book of Jeremiah and tell him he should change and he should do things. And it would seem like maybe Zedekiah is going to listen, but then he doesn't. And the people around him don't do that. Jeremiah tells him over and over again that Babylon will be back. And this time they will completely destroy Jerusalem if you do not do what they tell you to do. And so over these 7 to 9 to 11 years, Zedekiah starts out doing what Jeremiah tells him to do and what the king of Babylon tells him to do. But Zedekiah's heart toward the end begins to become hard and obstinate, and he begins to disobey the word of the Lord. He begins to disobey more and more the prophet Jeremiah and the prophet Baruch and the Libna and the other prophets. That there are several prophets that are described in the book of Jeremiah. Zedekiah's heart seems to turn away further and further away from God. Whereas there seemed to be hope in the beginning, there's no hope. And so he, after 9 years or so, he basically tells the envoy from Babylon that we're not going to pay any more taxes to Babylon. And he does the same thing that happened before. And so this time Nebuchadnezzar comes with his army, and Jeremiah pleads with Zedekiah. The army's coming. Zedekiah, don't resist them. Don't fight them. Open the gates of Jerusalem and they'll come in and they'll let you live. They'll do the same thing they did to Jehoiachin. But if you do not do what they tell you to do, then the whole city will be destroyed. And Zedekiah's heart became hard and became selfish. And he said, I will not do what they tell me to do. And so the wave of the Babylonian army marches toward Jerusalem. And Jeremiah tells Zedekiah to give himself up like Jehoiakim had done. Don't resist. Don't fight. But Zedekiah refuses to do that. In fact, he has two sets of advisors. He has Jeremiah on one side and he has these other prophets. And the other prophets say, Zedekiah, God said that He will always protect His temple. He'll protect His beloved Jerusalem. So you don't have to do anything. You don't have to give up. You just kind of keep fighting. And Jeremiah said, God has said, Zedekiah, that the end is here, and this is what you're to do. And Zedekiah refuses to listen to Jeremiah. And so the army of the Babylonians come and they siege Jerusalem. It's not an immediate destruction of the city, because Jerusalem is a walled city. It's a large, fortified, strong city at this time. And they besieged Jerusalem. And for 18 months, the Babylonian army is encamped outside of Jerusalem. And they're trying to get over the walls. They're trying to get in the city, but it's well fortified. It's well defended. And Zedekiah kind of has this sense that maybe they're going to be able to hold out. And But finally, as the food begins to run out, and that's what we read, that the problem with the siege of Jerusalem 18 months is they ran out of food. They did not have the food. There is a pretty neat story of how they got water in the city of Jerusalem during this time. But eventually, the people are so hungry, and finally the people inside the city think, we've got to break out, we've got to get out. And they come up with a plan, and they, in the nighttime, they get over the city wall, and the people try to get away from Jerusalem and escape, especially the army and the king and the leaders, and they're trying to get away. But then the Babylonians realize what they're doing, and it says that the army of the Babylonians then pursued after Zedekiah and all the army, and they found him in the valley that goes to Jericho. And having the opportunity to drive from Jericho to Jerusalem, it's kind of a desert area, kind of a hilly, desert, salty area. There's no growth, there's no trees, it is desert. And it's just this open barrenness between Jerusalem and Jericho. And just imagine Zedekiah and the army. I mean, you can see for miles across this area. It's not like you can hide anywhere. And Zedekiah is on the run. And the Babylonian army is after him. For 18 months, they've been trying to destroy, to get into the city. And finally, they've gotten in and they're angry. They're not about to be nice to Zedekiah. If he'd have given up in the beginning, then maybe they would have treated him just like they did the prior king, Jehoiachin. But they're not, and they finally catch up with Zedekiah, and he's captured. And so it says that they bring him to Nebuchadnezzar, and Nebuchadnezzar brings his sons before Zedekiah, and he kills his sons in front of Zedekiah. Just imagine that, your own sons there. You watch them killing your sons, and then they put out the eyes of Zedekiah, and here's the king. The king, the last king of Jerusalem, the last descendant of David on the throne. It began so well with David and the promises of God and the covenant and all those things, and now it ends on that desert area on the road to Jericho, on the way to Jericho, where the sons of the king are killed and the eyes of the king are gouged out, and they put chains, bronze chains on him, and they make him walk back to Babylon, and there he dies. Quite unlike Jehoiachin, who gave up when he had a chance. The difference between Jehoiachin and Zedekiah is Jehoiachin did what Jeremiah told him to do in the end. He didn't live a good life. He was evil in the eyes of the Lord, but he did do what Jeremiah told him to do. And because he did, God used the descendants of Jehoiachin in order, when they came back 70 years later, to begin to restore the remnant of Israel. An amazing story, the remnant of Israel, how God used the descendants of this king who was an evil king, but yet he did what Jeremiah said at that point, and God used that in the restoration of the people when they were brought back. Well, the Babylonian army comes into Jerusalem. They burn it to the ground. The temple is destroyed. I mean, it's leveled. They don't want anything left of anything religious in Jerusalem. I mean, they are angry. They're angry that for 18 months they besieged a city before they could finally get in. And they kill most of the people. They kill far more people in this second time than they did in the first time. The first time is almost like a voluntary deportment to Babylon. And those that wanted to go could. And it's almost like, well, we'll take part of your army who wants to go and be part of the Babylonian army. And we'll take your artisans and your craftsmen. And anybody that wants to go to Babylon, we'll take you back. It wasn't that way the second time. It was destruction, total destruction. It was in the first time that Ezekiel went to Babylon, and you have the beginning of the stories of Daniel and eventually Esther and Nehemiah and Ezra. That all went from the first time that people were taken to Babylon, not the second time. But the second time there was more death and destruction, and more people were killed. Some were taken to Babylon, but most of the people were killed because the king had refused to do what Jeremiah had told him to do. A few of the people escaped from the Babylonians and went south. And eventually that's what happened to Jeremiah. He was not killed during this raid in Jerusalem and the destruction. He had been taken out of the city, it says. And eventually, against his will, he was taken down to Egypt. You see, there's this back and forth between Egypt and Babylon. And if you're the friend of Babylon, you're the enemy of Egypt, and vice versa. And at this point, the only place they could escape to and get away from Babylon was to go to Egypt. And so a remnant went to Egypt and actually began a whole community of Jewish people in Egypt that continued for many, 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 many centuries up through the time of Jesus, and especially Alexandria, and became a very strong area for the remnant of Israel in North Africa, especially in Egypt, and then also in Ethiopia. Well, this brings to the end this time period that is very dark. It kind of brings in the darkness of the exile and of these terrible and devastating events that happen. I kind of think of what I've tried to describe tonight as being the terrible forest fire. You know, we read somewhere in California or out west, Colorado, you know, the fire starts and it gets everything in its way, destroying everything, blackness, and then out of the ashes, several weeks later, you'll see a little tiny growth come up, and that's what we have in the book of Jeremiah. Go on to that next slide, if you would, the last slide there. And then Jeremiah, after all this, what does Jeremiah say? He says, "I will turn their mourning into gladness." And then we read the beautiful picture in Jeremiah chapter 29, 30, 31, 32, and 33 of what God says after all this takes place. I mean the darkness of what's happened. But then God says, "I will turn their mourning into gladness." The book of Jeremiah is, as I've said before, it's one of the most difficult and painful books in the Bible. But it also has one of the most beautiful pictures of a God who will not ever ultimately give up. And he reaches out and he says, there will be a return. There will be a day. There will be a time when the calves will jump again in Jerusalem. I will turn their mourning into gladness. And that's where I want to go the next time we're together. It's not going to be for 3 weeks. Next week, we have Heather's going to be doing a missionary lesson. And the following Sunday night, Debbie and I will be away for the day. And so we won't be here. But the next Sunday we're together, I want to go to Jeremiah chapter 29. One of the most beautiful passages in the Old Testament. "For I know the plans I have for you, plans to bless you, a hope and a future." What a beautiful promise. I mean, there's growth in the middle of the darkness and the deadness and the hopelessness and the darkness of the days of the end of the kings of Judah. God gives a message of hope to the people, and we hopefully will pick up there the next time that we're together. Thank you for being here tonight. And entering into this great book of Jeremiah, I've tried to summarize a lot tonight. I'm sure I didn't get all the names right and some of the little things right about it. But it really is a fascinating time in the history of God's people. And I think there's value in knowing that history. And I enjoy it anyway. And I'm glad that you've been here to be with us tonight. Hope you have a good week. And God bless. Happy Mother's Day to some of you. Blessings.